Okay, so we'll move on now to the second talk, which is Phil Ryan. He's from UCD, and he's going to talk about Mapping Invisible Cities, Old Media's Lessons for the Frontiers.
Hello, I'm Phil. I'm from UCD. So I'm a sociologist who ended up in the School of Engineering and Architecture. I work with a group called Smart Lab. We do emerging and innovative technologies for marginalized users. My PhD itself is called Bureaucracy Map. Links up with my full-time job. I write to civil servants all day for immigrants. So really what I want to do with that project is create a user experience UX design template for people who have marginal needs. The way I describe it to people in parties, so I can stop talking, is that it's Google Maps before getting your driver's license. People with autism, etc., etc. So a lot of similarities with Jessica's thing, that I'm looking at how digital technologies can help marginalized users, but also how that digital technology can harm those marginalized users and us. The paper, because the great spirit of this event, I thought I'd do a paper that was very much about my postgraduate experience, which was a book that I really like that I'm using to inform my research. The book is Invisible Cities. It's by a writer called Evalio. I practiced this before I came in, but let me do it very slowly. Yep. This is smooth. Italio Calvino. I'm a listener. I don't really pronounce things very much. It's a 1970s book, and it reports the conversation between Genghis Khan and Marco Polo, and they discuss the empire of Genghis Khan. Marco Polo, I don't know if anyone knows him outside of the pool game. But Marco Polo was a trader who ended up going over to China, which was run by the Mongols at the time, and he became a representative of the Khan within the empire. He went around, he brought reports back. What the writer's done is he's imagined Marco Polo describing the empire to Genghis Khan through a conversation. Very short book. I'd be outside my time if I read it all here, but I would recommend reading it. He describes 55 different cities, but every last one of those cities is Venice. It's just his different understandings of those levels of Venice. And it's inspired a lot of art, a lot of it. It's inspired operas, it's inspired drawings, other things, I'm sure, too. Apparently, this paper, this is one of the cities, it's called Fedora. Each one of the cities is named after a lady. I was very tempted to do a Mumbo number 5 joke, but I thought the meta would be better. And that's really inspiring me on how I can actually see how new technologies are going to be used by people. So what the point of this paper is that we always talk about these new technologies coming in and changing how we're interacting with the world, and we need to find new grammars for it. But really, if you go into the old media, how people were trying to express the human condition through the books, it's already there. There's a lot of paperwork for it. The quote that really struck me from the start of the piece is, Kublai Khan does not necessarily believe everything Marco Polo says when he describes the cities visited on his expeditions. But the emperor of the Tartars does continue listening to the young Venetian with great attention and curiosity than he shows any other messenger or explorer of his. And again, this is an individual who doesn't speak the language of the Khan at the start of these conversations. He speaks whatever the Venetians were deeming. He was Macedonian himself, but we say he's Venetian. In the lives of the emperors, there is a moment which flows pride in the boundless extensions of their territories, of the territories we have conquered, and the melancholy and relief of knowing we shall soon give up any thought of knowing and understanding them. And again, so I'm seeing in the emperor, the way they describe it, very much the digital user. We're getting more and more content, more and more territory that we can interact with. But who can we trust? The person who's coming to us with the preformed idea of what they're showing us, or the person who's bringing us these symbols that we can infer for ourselves? There is a sense of emptiness that comes over us at the evening. With the order of the elephants after the rain and the sandalwood ashes growing cold in the braziers, a dizziness that makes rivers and mountains tremble on the fallow curves of the plain sphere where they are portrayed, and rolls up one after the other, the dispatches announcing to us the collapse of the last enemy troops from defeat to defeat, and flakes the wax of the seal of obscure kings who beseech our army's protection, offering exchange annual tributes of precious metals, tainted hides, tortoise shells. So again, I'm very much seeing the digital user as a conqueror. So this is the same symbol that was sent back from the Khans, not specifically Genghis Khan, it's slightly later, but these seals, these symbols, what is what we're putting out into the world as digital users. And what we're getting back is other people's symbols. Now, we can take them as just a strange realm, or we could turn our own maps into it. We could start seeing the world through these symbols in much more engaged sense with these new technologies. The AR technologies give us the opportunity to actually start bringing in our readings of the world to our actual interactions. What I feel like is happening a lot with these technologies, we're kind of building them around what the companies need. So one of the big AR extensions that we actually have seen is Pokemon Go. Now, as a Pokemon fan, Pokemon Go is not Pokemon. It is flicking stuff, flicking at random images on the screen. It's built around the monetization models of free-to-play games. It's an image, it's the image that the company wants us to have. This is from 2014's Marco Polo on Netflix. If you have not seen it, you can skip this one. It's not very good. But rather than grabbing on to the images that the people want us to have, why can't we just take a look behind the scenes? So even with the media that are very straightforward, there's always the opportunity to go down further. We can see the behind the scenes now with these new technologies. Rather than having Google Maps come straight up on you, I don't know if anyone's used Google Maps in a foreign city, I assume everyone has, they just feel like a bit more of a prescriptiveness to it, right? But if you were to turn on your hometown, that might be all right, but at this time of the day, I might want to go a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. And the way that Google Maps operates, you can't just put in a little bit of a change for yourself on that individual route. You have to follow what's on that line. If you want to, it might give you three or four options, but like, let's say I wanted to go get ice cream in one store and I want to go to the next store. I can't put that whole trip in, and I can't adapt the network outside of myself. And that's something I think that as these technologies increase and improve, we're really going to have to start looking at. We can become full nerds. So I don't know if anyone likes critical theory here. I'm a huge fan of Walter Benjamin. Anyone? No Benjis? There we go. We have an embarrassed nod. And Walter Benjamin was a very interesting theorist from around World War II. He committed suicide on the Swiss border, if memory serves. But he had a wonderful project called the Arcades Project, where he looked at consumerism and society within France at the turn of the 20th century. And he has a conception of something, what he calls a flaneur. And flaneurs were dandies, similar to what Oscar Wilde was, if people want to grab that into their head. They were people who would wander as slowly as possible around the city, observing every bit of that city, claiming it outside of its designed consumption points. So whereas the bazaar is designed to get you to spend your money in the most efficient way possible, what the dandy did was subvert that and enjoy the aesthetic structures of it. True Invisible Cities, the book, that's exactly what Genghis Khan does with the stories of Marco Polo. Marco Polo originally comes to him as someone who doesn't speak the language, as I said previously. He would describe cities through symbols. He would describe an entire city through a skull with mossy green on his teeth. He would have the crane swooping down to get a crab fish, and that would describe an entire city. The first 15 of the cities described in this state. And then halfway through, all of a sudden the Khan turns around and says, no, don't describe the cities to me. Let me describe a city to you, and you will tell me if it exists or not. And that's really what the flaneur is doing. The flaneur is seeing what is the possible in the city, what is there, what is not presented, but is nonetheless part of the structure. And this is why it's important, because in 2013, I don't know if anyone saw Google Glass. Google Glass was a huge flop. Google Glass had no reason to be a huge flop. It was pushed by one of the biggest companies in the world, all of the marketing you want. As a wonderful quote from one of the founders of Napster was, all the greatest minds of my generation are focused on one question, how to get someone to click the link. Really, all these technologies are being driven by these companies that have profit-making, have data collection as part of their key goal. in my research, because I'm looking at marginal users, a lot of what I'm looking at is how can we talk about consent for marginal users. Last paper I gave was on GDPR, general structure. What's important about pushing back, what's important about sitting down and reading these books and seeing how other people have thought about the world, is that we end up with this. You know, and it is the technological requirement of it. But why did this fail? Does anyone know why this failed? It's not because it was unpopular, not because of this, not because it was a billion things. People were annoyed that people were taking photos of them as they walked around. Imagine that, quaint, 5 years ago. I don't know about you, but as I walked here, it was 3 selfie sticks in Maynooth on a Monday. Sorry, this is not Monday, this is Friday. I've lost track of the days. But there were 3 selfie sticks walking along. And you know these people who walk along and they're having their conversation on FaceTime as they walk. I don't know, it just seems very, like the public space is being kind of pushed back. And again, so Pokemon Go, another case of the technology, the requirements of the company is creating the product rather than the needs of the user. A big part of Invisible City's narrative is that they switch from having these discussions to having logical debates and having chess games. Games are really how you understand our public space, if you think about it. Game theory, pushing of the integral spaces. And I think we'd be more playful with it. I think that society has something to feed into these conversations. I feel like marginal users, like geriatrics, my personal marginal user group are spectrum disorders. I feel like the book is pushing for that. Again, this sort of digital scarcity, I don't know if anyone's heard of this. This is the, I've actually forgotten. CryptoKitties. I remember this last night and I went off. Does anyone know what CryptoKitties is? Has anyone heard of these things? Cats? Okay, and again, so I'm kind of ramming the point in, but this is my rhetorical style. I have a nice written version, but you would like me reading it out. CryptoKitties are basically cryptocurrency. The idea of cryptocurrency is that we create blockchains so we can create individuality within digital endlessness. CryptoKitties is basically a crypto coin that has a graphic on it. These things sell for 50 grand. They are pictures. They are pictures with a little bit of code behind them. They also have a huge amount of environmental negativity to them. I think we should just always read a book and think about our society a little bit more inclusively. Thank you.